Hello and welcome to the Practical Tech Leadership Podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Liam Donoghue. In this show, I'll be chatting to C-level executives from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own careers. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us on SoundCloud, iTunes or Spotify, or you can join our Slack community. Thank you, enjoy the show. Hi, you're listening to another episode of Venturi's Voice. Today's guest is the Chief Product Officer at ImproveWell, John Masterson. Hello, John. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Hi there, Liam.
I think we're going to have a really exciting show today. We're going to be talking all about mindful leadership, the product manager's role in the software development lifecycle, and finding your own work methodologies. But before we get started, could you tell me and the listeners a bit about your background and career journey up to this point?
Yeah, sure. So I think I was recently putting together my bio for one of the things internally here at ImproveWell, and I was slightly alarmed to realize that I have over 20 years experience in technology. So that certainly has flown by, I would say. But I started off at about the age of 18 when I first got into, I joined a small database development company back in Ireland where I'm from. Where I really initially it was a summer job, but actually was really critical to how I it's where I learned my established my fundamentals for system design and how I approach technology today really comes from that. So that was my first sort of introduction into the world of developing systems and working with customers, and I continued working through that all the way through. I studied economics in university and thought I wanted to be an investment banker, but realized quite quickly that I didn't. So I then sort of moved away from technology, and I graduated from university and did a bit of travel and all the sort of floating around that people tend to do at that age. And before I came back and started working in a large PLC in Dublin, where I was involved in a corporate role, really in their head office, looking at sort of not specifically in technology, but I did end up building, using my database development skills, building an in-house system for occupational health and safety data. And again, it was kind of a really interesting case because I was both the end user and the developer at that point. So I worked there for about 5 years before taking another of my self-imposed sabbaticals, and I ended up in Sydney. So in Sydney, I got back into the database development and joined a software company there where I worked originally as a developer, and I was working in this database technology, which was slowly being phased out. So as the company was moving to web-based Ruby on Rails platforms, I then started moving into initially product management, becoming the product owner for these products, and then moving into business operations and ultimately senior management roles. So I was 7 years in total in Sydney before came back to London 3 years ago. I was really keen to move geographically closer sort of back to my family and friends, but also really excited by the kind of startup scene that there was in London. So I came back and I joined a startup, employee number two, selling JavaScript data grid components. And here really my role was building out it actually wasn't on the technical side, it was building out the business function, so the sales, marketing, customer support. So I did that for 18 months, becoming the COO there before I joined my current startup again, employee number two. It seems to be my my sweet spot for joining companies.
A lucky number.
hopefully. And then came back into the world of product management and really on the technical side. So I joined here as the Chief Product Officer, and that's where I find myself today.
That sounds like a really interesting journey. There's loads there that we could dive into. Could you tell me a bit more about your decision to do economics at uni? You started doing database management at 18. Was that the case of, did you think that there wasn't much of a career in technology, or was technology something that you enjoyed but you felt you needed to do something a bit more academic at uni?
Yeah. That's a really interesting question, because I think really, again, just by the vagaries of the system that they have in Ireland, you make your sort of university choices fairly early into the... So I kind of had made my choice essentially before I started working in this technology. We always had computers in the house, you know, growing up. My dad is a scientist and worked in university, and we always had computers around the place. So I was using them from a really, you know, early age. But I suppose it didn't really dawn on me that actually this was a career I could have gone down. So I really look at that time in my life as really quite, you know, I got two educations at that point. I got my sort of more classical one in economics, which, you know, speaking frankly, I wasn't entirely engaged with. But then I worked essentially all the way to university, and I was doing one day a week of full day a week, you know, and I was out visiting customers. I was out, you know, troubleshooting bugs. I was, you know, doing all that sort of stuff, doing actual development. And in terms of a grounding for me and a real education, I think that was it was a really practical and hands-on, like, you know, you have to. Yeah, I remember one story where I had a customer. It was, you know, we're dealing with a lot of small entrepreneurs who had, a lot of them had built their own business. We worked in the printing sector and the marketing companies, and that we essentially built print management systems. And I had one guy, and he said, you know, John, I want you to sit down and click every single button in the system and make sure that it works. And if it doesn't work, you need to fix it. And I mean, I was 19, 20, probably 19 at that point. And that was a real study in kind of accountability, and a real study in, like, you know what, the customer's right. Like, if the things don't work, you need to sit down and do it. So I look back at my time in university as, look, it was great. You know, I got a good grounding, and, you know, through economics, you do study statistics. You do study. It does give me a way of thinking around data. You know, improved my analytical capabilities. I did things like accounting, which I use now. And, you know, so don't get me wrong, but I sort of had these two tracks running at the same time. The other one was basically in the real world, dealing with people. I really think that it sort of embedded in me just the connection that really, and I think I've said this before, or I've said this, you know, something I'm interested in, is really the technology is only as good as the application of it. And it, ultimately it has to work for the end user. So in this case, I bring to mind these people who've run their own business and who set up their own companies, and they bought this software to do a job for them. They don't care whether it's, you know, what it does in the background, really, once all the buttons don't work. So,
well, I think you've answered my next question there. One of the reasons I wanted to dive on the economics at uni was because you've said that you had two paths running at the same time. And now that you've sort of went back to the technology, although you know, maybe at the time the economics didn't seem that engaging, but surely that's give you a really good understanding of the business applications that technology has. You said, obviously, in your second start when you were selling JavaScript as a business function, you were the COO. So you were dealing mm-hmm. with the business aspects there. So it must have helped quite a lot in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny, actually, because I think in a way it's only when you look back, you realize the sort of, you know, there's actually quite a coherent story to my career, even though in no way did I plan that. It's just kind of how it's kind of panned out. But like the different bits and pieces that I've done along the way, for example, one of the modules I studied in the university was contract law. And a huge part of my role as COO of AG Grid was negotiating contracts. You know, I don't have a legal background, but you know, you're kind of all these bits from your past you pick up and you kind of use them again. So yeah, definitely that was really interesting. And I think, you know, exactly, getting into things like pricing, how pricing works, and getting, you know, looking at doing analysis of, you know, if we changed our pricing here, what would the impact be? And yeah, I think, you know, I had a grounding in that. And I think also I'm actually glad that I didn't study computer science. I actually think it's a strength of mine, is that I don't have sort of, you know, really deep, you know, technical understanding of how computers and computer programs, you know, work. I think I've got a mix of, you know, I'm technical enough to be dangerous, but I also am very much grounded in what the business needs to do, and that I think I'm about the application of technology.
Yeah, because that's another thing I wanted to dive on very, very quickly about your role and what you chose to do at university. Tech in the education sector, you know, if you were to go in and do a computer science degree. Do you feel that you would have got as much value out of that as opposed to when you were just doing it on your own and teaching yourself? Because technology moves so quickly, the value that's in them sort of formal degrees, like computer science degrees, probably isn't that much. What do you think about that?
I think that there's you're taught certain ways of thinking, and I think some of the you know, if you want to be a developer and you really want to get into sort of, you know, designing really excellent top level code, I think having a computer science degree, because you learn the basics of how, you know, patterns that you'll use in programming and essentially working with the nuts and bolts of the actual computer around, you know, memory, etc. So I think that grounding is very important. But I think for a role such as myself, and I think we're going to touch on the importance of product management. I think in a way, the fact that I have a bit less knowledge of that means I'm sort of unencumbered by that thinking, if that makes sense. I think a really technical, don't get me wrong, there's a role for the really technical people, and for, you know, the excellent developers are these people who've done their computer science degrees. But I don't think you're going to go to university and learn, you're probably not going to learn the most current language. You know, I don't know what languages I teach, but, you know, the languages change so quickly. But I think what you will get is a good grounding in, you know, how you structure code, how you structure systems, or like system design, architecture, etc.
Yeah. Well, technology is a disruptor, and technology in the education sector is something we touch on quite a bit with different guests. So it's always good to get as many people's opinions as possible. But let's talk about ImproveWell. Can you tell me about the company, its mission, its background?
Sure.
Where it is in the health tech space and what it's doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So ImproveWell is a workforce engagement platform, which is focused on quality improvement in the healthcare sector. So essentially, you know, our vision is to harness the innovation of a workforce across, there's 1.7 million people in the NHS who are working in the NHS. So the company was originally founded by a doctor who was working as a junior doctor, and he had improvement ideas, but he wasn't clear of the pathway how to get those through to, you know, to have them implemented. So he came up with this idea of having a mobile app. Launched it as a pilot with a trust here in London, and then as it sort of grew legs, our current CEO and co-founder joined to really start scaling up and bringing that, you know, bringing the business to more and more trusts and even outside the UK as well. So we're going to be 3 years old at the end of this month, in fact, September, and I think that we're now working across 21 organizations, and we're in 3 different countries. So we started our global expansion. So really, in a nutshell, our solution makes it easy for complex organizations to capture real-time data from their highly skilled workforce. So we have a smartphone app for doctors, nurses, who can get involved, makes improvement ideas. And then that information is fed through to a dashboard for the management and the quality improvement functions to implement those. So it's basically about delivering ideas from the front line and getting them implemented to really ultimately improve healthcare for all of us here in the UK and beyond.
Mm-hmm. And your role specifically as a chief product officer at ImproveWell, what projects have you undertaken while you've been at ImproveWell, and like, how have they had a positive impact on the business?
Sure. So we have our core product, which is this smartphone app and supporting web platform. So my day-to-day job is essentially making sure that running the software development lifecycle of that product. So we've recently had a major upgrade of that product. So we've kind of launched version 4, which we believe is our go-to-market. It's taken all the learnings of the first couple of years of running with various trusts. So I joined right in time just to get involved in that project, and that went live in April this year. So I work with our development teams. We've got various development teams who I work with, and really I try and make sure that we're building the right things. Try and make sure that we're building them the most efficient way as possible. We're also then at the same time one of the other pieces that's really important to us is actually looking at what other products we can offer in this space as well. So obviously, as we're getting all of this data coming into us, you know, there's an element of machine learning And that's our vision, really, is to have a, you know, as all of these, this information is presented to us, we're building a database of global healthcare innovation ideas, you know, and we see that as being incredibly powerful. So we've hired our first data scientist this year. So I also work closely with him to really to try and, you know, we're still at the early stages of that, you know, and like all data science, you're not exactly sure, you know, where it's going to end up, but we're starting to see some early really positive signs of, you know, our vision is to be a smart predictive tool that'll actually help people to even identify problems, you know, before they bubble up to the top. So that's really my you know, day to day. I'm very hands on in terms of like I'm in Jira, I'm creating tickets, I'm testing, I'm deploying, I'm, you know, doing all that kind of stuff, and really trying to bring what I believe is sort of best in class product management to improve well and you know, bring us up to make sure that we are delivering software in the most efficient way that we can.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, major updates I heard there. Version 4. Yes. That's a lot of versions, isn't it? that obviously must have come with some unique challenges. And how did you as a product manager overcome them then?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So it ended up being sort of a nine month build. So it's always a challenge rebuilding an established piece of software into a new version is always it's always underestimated, because so much knowledge that goes into a piece of software. You think about all those little refinements, all those code changes that have gone in over the years. So really the challenges we had was, you know, trying to extract all of that information from our stakeholders. You know, the original founder, you know, our CEO works incredibly closely with our customers and has a really, you know, is the voice of our customer in our organization. So, you know, she knows the product inside out. So it was really converting that into specifications and a work methodology that could allow us to deliver. And also what was, you know, quite a compressed time frame as well. So yeah, all the challenges were there in terms of, there was a data migration, there was, you know, running into various, really that was my role on it, particularly in the last 6 months of the build, was really working very close with our development partner on a daily basis, even on site with them at times, you know, just sitting down with developers and working through and, you know, understanding why this piece wouldn't work and how that would work with, you know, with something else.
Was there any challenges around legacy software as well? Was there any stuff in there that was so old that it was really hard to deal with?
Certainly there was some code, you know, yeah, it was kind of built on we'd had a few different development teams, I guess, had worked on it. And you know, all development teams have their own style and have their own way of doing it. And as I said, we took the opportunity to update all of the underlying technology. So we've moved to all the latest versions of our stack, essentially. So yeah, that was definitely a challenge, but I think that's something that you have to, you know, that's something that you have to do. You have to always balance that require, you need to keep up to date with the latest versions of things from a recruitment perspective, from a security perspective. And, you know, technical teams are always keen to build stuff themselves. So it's always just trying to temper that enthusiasm with a bit of reality. So.
Yeah. One other thing I'd like to chat about here as well is, you said you hired your first data scientist. Now, I don't want to get super technical and go under the hood of the app and everything, but how have you found integrating, you know, data functionality into the app?
So, I mean, firstly, I'll say it's been a huge learning curve for me. Data science is something I've done a little bit of in the past, but really not very much. So I've sort of surreptitiously been trying to learn, you know, on the signing up for various courses and things as I'm going along as well. So, I think one of the challenges and one of the things that we're really keen to focus on is obviously a lot of the stuff the output that comes out of data science. You know, it comes with one of the caveats of the data, of the outputs that come, is that there's a certain confidence level in the data. You know, and if it could be between 80 or 90%, but obviously from our customer's perspective, if we say something that's come from our data science, it has to, you know, we have to back it and stand behind it. So the challenge I think we face, you know, and we're continuing to face, is how do we convert output and insights from data science modeling and from, you know, the different, we're doing NLP and various different techniques. How do we convert that into really deliverable and insightful pieces of features in our core product? So that's kind of an ongoing thing. And it's something that I really see my role as is, look, I'm never going to be an expert in data science. But I think I hopefully can provide some help in how we apply those insights to actually give something that's ultimately useful to our customer. Because if it's not useful to our customer, it comes back to the thing of, yeah, it's not useful to us really.
Something you said at the end there, I think is a really nice like segue into talking a bit about leadership. You know, you'll never be an expert at data science, but I suppose the position you're in now, you don't need to be, but you need to be able to hire and manage a team of people who have the skills that you don't have. When it comes to like your management and leadership methodologies, how do you go about deciding how to run and manage a team? I know you've said in your notes, finding your own methodology is something that's very important, and you shouldn't be rigorous in trying to implement one sort of framework, but you should pick and choose, you know, from bits from Agile, bits from, dare I say, Waterfall, and bringing them together. So how do you go about sort of like managing and leading a team like that?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really, really critical is not having a sort of ideological, being a slave to any one ideology. And I think that honestly, most of my experience comes from doing, you know, doing it probably badly in the past. I think I would like to think that I'm sort of open about where my knowledge starts and ends. I'd like to get sort of people who have more knowledge than me. So the data scientist is a great example. The technical people that I work with, you know, I've done a really small bit of coding. I'm able to sit and look at a piece of code and understand what it's doing, but I'm not an expert in it. But I like to ask them questions to explain to me what it's doing. So that seems to be for me is then I think I can add value in terms of really pointing their talents and their abilities in the right direction and sort of coming in and so in the way I do that is really through regular, be it stand-ups or, you know, catch-ups once or twice a week and saying, look, you know, what's the broad goal of what we're trying to do? I try not to micromanage, you know, and I think that's you know, a really important thing. And then I think it's also just having regular, you know, I think a lot about it's what I'm doing working and it, you know, are we getting the results that we need? I think ultimately if what I would always say is that, if I'm the chief product officer, say here at ImproveWell, I'm ultimately responsible for the code that goes out the door. I'm ultimately responsible for the data science that we do. And, you know, if members of my team, you know, aren't aligned with that, then that's my fault, and I need to take, you know, I need to have an iterative approach to improving how that happens. So I think that also can build trust with your team. You need to build trust. You need to let people find, you know, go explore their areas where they feel they've got expertise. You know, I'll give them some leeway to go and do that, but ultimately trying to interject and say, okay, well, why are we doing this? So again, coming back to this question all the time of like, okay, you know, what are the next steps? Why are we doing this? So really that's what I try to do is try and provide sort of high level guidance, I would say, and aligning it to what are the goals that we're trying to achieve.
And what role does company culture play in that methodology you've just described then? Surely that's important in getting everyone on the same track when it comes to ultimately getting a product out the door.
Absolutely, yeah. I think company culture is really, really, really important. And I think I really, you know, places where, and I've worked in, you know, many places over my years, that, you know, I think having regular communication about what the actual goals of the company are, and how the things that we're doing you know, at each different function connects to those. So here at Approva, for example, we have a weekly meeting every Monday where we go through, those goals for the company for the month, and everyone is sort of, you know, we go through those, and everyone themselves and individually sets their goals for the week. So we have that regular check-in of setting those goals. And I think you also need to have a culture where, you know, there's ample time for discussion, but equally there's also clearly a hierarchy that makes decisions as well. And I think, these flat management structures is great, and everyone having, kind of a small company, so everyone has access to all the to senior people. However, I think also it's important that I think a key part of my role as a leader in the company is I ultimately need to make decisions. I need to weigh up the information that's given to me, and then I need to make, set out clear goals, clear decisions, so that, because I think people can get behind that. I think that sets the culture.
Yeah, interesting. It's been a really fun chat today. I'd like to close off by maybe asking if you've got any further reading, watching, or listening resources for anyone who's interested in the role of a chief product officer or managing and leading teams. Do you have anything you could maybe share with our listeners? We can direct them to do learn a bit more about management.
So, nothing unfortunately springs to mind immediately, but what I would say is one of the things I got involved in is I've been involved in doing some mentoring with some peers in the industry, and I try to attend meetups and things. And I think while there's two good elements to that, there's obviously the content of those meetups, but also I think what I've been finding is that by even taking that hour a week or, going to a meetup, it does give you yourself time to step away from your day job. And I think it just tends to get you to think about your role in a more strategic way. So I would encourage people, whatever it may be, whether it's doing mentoring, either giving or receiving, or attending a meetup or whatever it might be, try and find some way where you can step out of your day job and step out of your all those day-to-day tasks, because I've found that's really helped my strategic thinking over the last while.
Ace, thanks for that. And finally, if any listeners want to learn more about Improve Well or are interested in your service offering, where can they go to find out about you?
Sure. So yeah, the best thing to do is we're really active on Twitter. So Twitter is really important to us. So yeah, you can find us on Twitter. We're at Improve Well UK. And then there's lots more information about our product and, some videos from our customers on our website as well, which is improvewell.com.
Great. We will obviously put a link to your Twitter and your website in the show notes that accompany the episode. So anyone listening, you can head there and you'll be able to get straight to Improve Well's Twitter. That was really fun chat today. I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for coming on, John. I hope you had a good time.
So thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to this Venturi's Voice podcast. You can find links to any resources mentioned in the episode in the show notes on our website. If you enjoyed the show and want to hear more, you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Spotify. We also have a Slack community, which you can join via the link on our homepage at venturi-group.com. Thanks for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you again.